House Committee on Intergovernmental Affairs, April 18, 1989.
We'll call the House Committee on Intergovernmental Affairs to order, and we'll open the public hearing on 3174 and call forward Representative Mike Nelson and
Mr. Donnell.
And Mr. Donnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michael Nelson. I'm a state representative for District 59, and it's a real pleasure to be here with Mr. Donnell. Representative Ray Baum wishes me to extend his best wishes, and he wishes he could be here. He's in support of this bill, and if he can get out of a special meeting of judiciary, he will be here. I'd like to talk about this bill just briefly and then turn the rest of the testimony over to Mr. Donnell. This bill is sort of a unique concept in providing emergency services. I would hope that you would read the bill thoroughly. It's a problem that we have in Eastern Oregon, and it's a problem of good government and a problem of safety. And I understand that there's possibly some amendments that are going to be offered, and I would like to look at those amendments when they're brought forth. I have not seen them yet. But at this time, I'd like to thank you for allowing us to testify first. And Mr. Donnell, would you like to proceed, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Stephen Donnell. I live in La Grande, Oregon. The reason this bill came about is that about 5 years ago, the people in Union County elected to establish a emergency services or medical district. But at the time that they made that vote, they did not fund it underneath the ad valorem a basis for funding as presently exists in the state. They did pass a special levy to fund the district, and that levy money has run out. If you notice in the testimony, the district is now out of business. They're formed under the law. They have no funding. They don't have any assets, and they're out of business. What happens is that right now in Union County, if I'm a logger or a rancher out on my ranch or out in the woods, there is no way for me to get from where I get hurt back to the hospital unless I hire Rambling Rotors or Bill Knight, and he comes out on a private contract, and he does not necessarily have to have his equipment on standby for that. We did have Lifeguard 1 at one time. That was Mr. Knight and Rambling Rotors. He had not only helicopters, he also had fixed-wing aircraft to provide these services. That is now no longer in business. The corporation and the operation was split up. Umatilla took part of it. Union County took part of it. The Umatilla service is now out of business. If you remember a while back, their helicopter crashed, and they no longer supply helicopter service. The only service that's supplied now in Union County in Eastern Oregon is fixed-wing aircraft, and that's being run by the hospital in La Grande, Oregon. I've asked to have this bill put in. Robert Brizzotti, in the last legislative session, put a bill in which is very similar to this. The committee looked at the bill. They thought it had excellent concept. At that time, the discussion came up to extend the provisions of this bill to fire districts and possibly other service districts so that they could be funded on a more equitable basis in the ad valorem tax. For instance, right now, if I have a large ranch or large holdings in Eastern Oregon, and we have a district of this type, I have to pay a rate on my tax base of all the value of my holdings. I might have only on that particular piece of property a ranch house, maybe a barn or a corral or whatever, but I might have 2,000 or 3,000 acres. Most of that land in Eastern Oregon is covered under either federal or state fire protection districts. So in this case, as far as the land is concerned, I'd be paying double taxation. I'd be paying twice. I'd be paying for fire protection underneath the state protection, and then I'd also be paying to the service district. What this bill does is allow the county court, as an option, it's not mandatory, it is a funding option, to establish a service district and fund that service district by the use of service fees. They would hold a public hearing, they would establish a fee basis, and right now we've estimated, I talked to Mr. Knight, who had the Lifeguard 1 and 2 in Union County, Umatilla and Baker County. He even went into Grant County, Grants Pass at one time, Lau County, and And we figured out that it would cost the taxpayers and the people who live in the area approximately $1 to $1.50 a month for this type of service. We're talking about $12 to $15 a year to have emergency medical service on a quick response basis. If the helicopter was based in Union County in LaGrande, and I'm not necessarily saying that that's where it should absolutely be, the total area that we're talking about can be covered by helicopter within 20 to 25 minutes. So you have a very quick response time, and at the same time, you would also have the ability to get that individual, if they had intensive care or a care that could not be supplied at the local nearest hospital, take them to one of the airports such as Baker or LaGrand or to Pendleton, put them on the plane and take them to wherever they have to go to get the best possible medical treatment and service. The amendment that's proposed would allow the, this is the amendment by the senator and the other people that Representative Nelson talked about, would allow the district to, who only supplies fire support, not necessarily emergency medical service, to also use service fees in their funding. And that also presents a more equitable situation in that if you have lands, as I said previously, that are covered under other fire districts, such as with the federal department, the federal government, and or the state, the county court being the governing body, the district could opt those out, and then the individual will only have to pay ad valorem base on the land that he doesn't already have coverage on. I'd be willing to answer any questions, discuss any aspects of the bill with you, and I would solicit your comments.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wehage.
Would there be an initial assessment to kind of get the project going, or would you simply start, as I read the bill, there would be a public hearing to establish what the charges would be, but is there an initial amount of money that might be required, and if so, how would that be collected?
The way the bill is set up, the county, the governing body of the district would determine what they feel is an equitable service fee. They make their own establishment of that. They must contact the county assessor before they do that. They come up with what they feel would be equitable fees. Then they have the public hearing and adjust the fees at that point.
Mr. Chairman,
mm-hmm.
The statement in the summary says that the charges would be collected in the same manner as other municipal assessments and charges. How would the money be collected? It's going to be established on the basis, in some cases, of the number of people who live in a house or the number of employees at a particular business.
That is correct. It would be collected the same as any other tax levied on the property, any other service charge fee or ad valorem base tax or anything else. And it's handled as far as the county assessor is concerned, the county tax collector is concerned, and the county court is concerned, as any other tax. The only difference is instead of being based upon the value of your total holdings, which is under the ad valorem concept, it's based upon the determination of the district governing body's aspect of how much they feel you should pay for the service.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Stein.
I was wondering if there are any other examples of this type of method for providing for services, for paying for the provision of services?
Yes, the translator districts, which are formed underneath the Oregon statutes, now are doing that. We have a translator district in Union, Baker, and Wallowa County, and we do operate underneath that. Now, that is a not-for-profit private corporation chartered underneath the, it's a public corporation, chartered underneath the laws of the state of Oregon, and we do charge a service fee on that basis. There is a difference because the translator district is not something which is a matter of life and death. People can opt out of the translator district. In other words, if they sign a statement that they will not use the service or they get service from another location or another method, they don't have to pay the service fee. A translator district is a district which takes TV broadcast signals and then rebroadcasts them on other frequencies for people in the area. So we do have this type of concept in operation in the translator districts, and it works very well in the areas that it's been established. There's been really no problems with it.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions at this point? I think Senator Dukes has some suggested amendments, and if you could listen to those, and then if that raises any questions, then we'll go over those.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Joan Duke, State Senator from District 1.
We only have three copies of your amendments, but why don't you go ahead and explain them to
I've
us, and then
at least
we'll get
one copy here.
We'll get additional copies, and we can get an idea of the concept of them and then go from there.
It's a real simple concept. Mr. Chair, you may be the only one who was here last session when we went around this. Last session, we set up two systems for basically 911 districts. One could be a county service district, and the other was the district that went to a vote of the people. And there were two separate bills and two separate systems. I now have some people who want to do that, and they've run into a snag. They're including the entire county in their district, and it is urban and rural. And the rural people are very rural, and they want to make sure that they have someone from their area on the board of directors. And although we thought we'd included everything, the Secretary of State's office, in reading the statute, says that because the language says that they must be elected at large, that they cannot be nominated by district. And all this amendment does is say that you have an option in setting up the board of directors of an emergency services district, that you can be nominated from a zone, from a district, and elected at large, or you can be nominated at large and elected at large. It simply gives them another option, and it's one that my Columbia County folks happen to need. Without that, they won't be able to set up their district because they have to, if you're familiar with 911 issues, every jurisdiction has to sign off. And these folks won't sign off unless they can be guaranteed that they will have someone to represent their area. So all it is saying that the Mist Vernonia area will have someone on the board. That's all it does.
Questions?
It's a little lengthy because it goes into, if you're going to have them nominated by zone, then you have to have a description and a map of the zone. And it, in the nominating petition, there are some specifics, and the amendment lays out those specifics.
In the county, if it's a county service district, is one of the options to have the Board of County Commissioners or the county court serve as the board, or does it automatically?
Yes, that is one of the options, and sometimes the counties will choose to do that. As a former county commissioner, I know it's not always the thing that you like most about the job, and so it's often preferred to allow the individuals, if you can find individuals in an area who want to take on that job, to allow them to do it themselves.
Would this still elect them countywide, but you would serve from a district?
Or they could serve from the county. It gives them the option. They could either be from anywhere in the county if that's what you wanted. Actually, anywhere in the district. The district does not have to be countywide.
Mm-hmm.
Or they could be from a zone.
But the way the amendment is, everybody would get to vote on the director.
Yep, they'd be elected at large.
Any questions?
Okay.
Let's see what the other folks think about the amendments, and then we'll go from there.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. It's nice that you're not over here dominating the committee like you did last year.
I promise, Mr. Chair, that I tried to do better this session.
Last year, when we moved to Senate bills, the senator was over here on a practically daily basis, even when we didn't know. Yeah, we could have put her on the committee. Have you had a chance to look at those?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I personally don't have any problem with those amendments, but I think Steve might want to make a comment, so we make sure we're doing everything properly, and we're not going to pass something that won't work. I'll let Steve make a comment or two on those amendments.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Stephen Donnell, and since this district is formed under ORS 440 .305 to 440.410, we find that the governing body for the district is the county court under 451485. And I agree with the concept. I think that the 911 situation is an excellent idea, but I think you need to have your legislative counsel, your legal counsel, committee legal counsel, work out the language so that we can incorporate what has been requested. Because as it stands right now, I have not seen the amendments. I'm not sure that that's been taken into consideration. That's my only comment.
Yeah, I think the assumption is that these would fit in. And if I understand what Senator Duke said, there's no reason to assume that if you set up a county service district in the county court or the Board of Commissioners is the governing body, that would have any effect then. It's just if they went to the other option.
Yes.
And then even if they go to that option, it gives them the option of having people elected from districts, but still elected by everybody in the county.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We agree with that.
If we go ahead and pass this out, then if there is any question on that, then it would be an opportunity to clarify that on the Senate side. Because you wouldn't have any problem with that if it's necessary.
We just saw the amendment just a few minutes ago.
Now, you said you wanted us to read the bill. Would you rather us take the time to hold it over and read it, or would
I withdraw my request, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure all of you've read it.
Yeah, well, we have another amendment, and John will go through that.
Mr. Chair, the LC amendment stated for labeled HB 3174-1 is an amendment that was prepared at the request of Senator Brockman. He may or may not be able to join us here in a few minutes to explain the amendment in the interest of saving time. I think what the intent of the amendment is. It would basically, on page 2 of the bill, reword in section 5, sub 1, in lines 17 through 20. The language in the existing bill, in the printed bill, would provide that a rural fire protection district could use the financing method proposed in the bill only to finance acquisition, operation, or maintenance of emergency medical and ambulance service equipment and vehicles. Section 5 in the proposed amendments is a little bit broader in its scope in that it indicates that funding of this source could be used to carry into effect all or any powers granted by this chapter to finance any district activity authorized by this chapter. So in other words, this would allow rural fire protection districts the option of using this financing method to finance any activity or duty that the statute now authorizes them to perform.
Is there anyone else signed up on the bill?
Not that I know.
Okay, we'll close the public hearing and move into work session on House Bill 3174.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would move the dash 1 and dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3174.
Okay, Representative Stein moves the dash 1 and dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3174. Is there any discussion? Is there any?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could I have a further clarification on the dash 1 amendments? The authorized by this chapter, is that everything under Chapter 451?
No, this would be everything under Chapter 478, which is the chapter that deals with rural fire protection districts. If you'll notice, Section 4 of the bill provides that Sections 5 and 6 of this Act are added to and made part of ORS Chapter 478. That is the chapter that deals with rural fire protection districts. So the chapter we're talking about here is that chapter.
So this could include the purchase of fire equipment, the setting up of fire buildings, fire stations?
Right.
Okay, is there any objection to accepting the amendments? If not, they're accepted. Yeah. Okay, the question was, why would you want to get away from the ad valorem tax? And I think that what this does is give more flexibility in charging people who will be likely users of the system. And I don't know what would happen in the case of, say, Diamond Lake Resort, how their ad valorem tax works there. But if they were part of an emergency services district, then they could be charged on a basis that would not be just on the value of that property, that they, the structures they have there. Somebody could have a large capital investment and not have any more use of the system than somebody that had just a house. And what we got into last time on it was if you have a house with a family of five in it and the house is worth $35,000, they might not have half the use of the service of somebody of family of five with in a $90,000 house, say. So that we kind of have an intrinsic assessment on the basis of a home would be so much. In the case of a fire, a church building might have a certain assessment, and it would not necessarily go on the value of the property.
Let me ask this out, Sheriff, if I may get my thoughts together. Do the people that live within this district have an opportunity to vote on those budgets? Or do you have a board that just makes up a budget and lays it on?
As I understand it, it would go through the same budget process as it would for any other public entity. It would have to be set up in a manner like by ordinance or something so that if people didn't like it, they'd have an opportunity to refer it to a referendum or whatever. To me, the nice thing is that it's permissive, and it kind of has to be done with the blessing of the people that are going to be charged. It can't just be foisted off on somebody. And we're not telling any county service district that they should function this way.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I would say that a county sewer district kind of functions this way. They levy an assessment or a fee based on the use of the system. And so you have like a house may pay $12 a month, a car wash that generates more activity with the sewer system may pay $150 a month.
But may I ask, when they set up that sewer district, the public had a right to, had the privilege to vote up or down on it, didn't they?
Yeah, and in the formation.
That's my
yeah.
concern. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Entertaining a motion?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3174 be sent to the House with House floor with the due pass as amended, the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Wehage moves House Bill 3174 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
Nope.
Edward.
Representative Cease. Representative Hostica. Representative Oakley.
Aye.
Representative Stein.
Aye.
Representative Wehage.
Aye.
Representative Markham.
Aye.
Representative Young.
Aye. Passes, and I believe Representative Nelson said he would carry it, or he was going to check with Ray Baum. Apparently, there was some question about whether Ray might want to carry it, but we'll check on that.
Chairman?
Yes. But I didn't want to give it to Representative Markham.
We're carrying the Senate's, because they can't see.
Would you like to come up and beg a little bit?
Yes, I would. I'd love to, but you're in the midst of something.
We've already handled your problem.
I understand that, but that's the reason I came.
One of your problems. I wouldn't want to pretend.
Good job.
Well, I just wanted to thank you. That's okay. I'm glad that I wasn't necessary and that the good work that I have already done preceded me.
That's better than he lays it on too much.
Yes.
We'll recall.
Okay.
Which one? Do you want to just invite Debbie and Brad?
Yeah, why don't we?
Any general comments they want to make?
Yeah. Before we move into the sewage works bills, why don't we have Gresham and Portland come up and answer all the charges from the other night? Just looks like Debbie's the only one that's here. Must have been true about Portland. Oh, no.
Brad's back there.
They look excited to come, don't they?
Brad's way in the back. I don't think he can hear you.
I will be right back.
I think the main question the other night was, and it's not a new question to you or to the holdovers from last committee, is are there any charges with the areas that are being sewered now that are being placed on them that basically accrue to the advantage of the whole system out of proportion to those folks that are being assessed in the new areas? And I mean, it's an old question. Anytime anybody develops any place, are they paying their way or are they paying more than their way or are they being subsidized?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dave Gooley. I'm with the City of Portland's Bureau of Environmental Services. The folks in Mid-County are paying three charges to acquire sewer services. An assessment for the sewer that serves their specific property based on the actual cost of the sewer. And that assessment is levied in the same fashion that assessments have always been levied in Portland that are currently levied elsewhere within the city. There's absolutely no difference whatsoever in that process, and it is based on actual cost, and those actual costs include, and I'm recalling from memory, the actual construction contract cost, the cost of engineering design, the cost of the legal requirement cost of advertising the project, and an administrative overhead charge related to the function of, I believe, either two or four individuals in the auditor's office who do that function, who prepare the assessments and levy them and do that. No other costs are involved in the assessment. The second charge is the private plumbing cost, what you have to do on site to connect to the sewer, to disconnect your cesspool and dig your yard up, or whatever it takes to connect. And that cost is based between the homeowner or the property owner and whoever does the work. The city's not involved in that one, and to that extent, the costs in that area will be the same as they would be anywhere else.
But how much are the inspection fees?
The third cost is the systems development charge that the property owner pays, and associated with that are inspection fees for inspecting the connection and the plumbing. The inspection fees, I believe, now are in the range of $20 to $50. They are under the same fee schedule applied anywhere within the city of Portland. There's no difference whatsoever inside or outside the city, and there's been no adjustment and those fees based upon this project, except I believe a couple of years ago we did, because of the focus of the project, increase or improve the efficiencies in inspection, discontinued one inspection by moving the branch line instead of connecting at the curb line, having it go all the way to the property line. We were able to eliminate one inspection by a public rights-of-way inspector. Beyond that, those fees are exactly the same as paid anywhere else and are basically in line with what's been paid over the last many years. The other charge is the systems development charge itself right now, $875 for a single-family home. That is the same charge that has been levied inside and outside, or inside the city for years. It's actually at the beginning of this project, in large part because of federal grants, has come down from what it was even 3 years ago. But that charge is the same levied inside and outside. If there were industry locating in Rivergate, they would pay that same charge based on the equivalent dwelling units they would discharge to the sewer. Absolutely no difference whatsoever. There is, in every regard, no difference between inside and outside Portland in the affected area. Portland's policy prior to the beginning of this project was not to serve outside the city. And we just simply, the city did not do that unless it was under a contractual relationship with another agency. For example, we provide sewage treatment services to the city of Lake Oswego via a wholesale contract with the city. But we did not provide services on a retail basis. Because of the EQC order, the city agreed to provide service to the unincorporated area within the affected area only. And under terms of that order and in the implementation plan and following that with legislation that was passed last session, those services are provided at exactly the same rates and costs and systems and procedures as are provided inside the city itself. There was one difference in the financing of property owner assessments and connection charges in that the city did not want to levy Bancroft bonds or issue Bancroft bonds for properties in the unincorporated area because, as you know, those are double-barreled bonds and they're backed by the